This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least three times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, man, it is Dukes and Bell. We are the number one sports talk station in town. Thanks for hanging out with us, man. Number one show is our man Chris Thomas in for Carl Dukes. Just texted Carl, how are the tables? How are your bets? How you doing with your brackets? He's out there in Sin City right now, and needless to say, it's been a little cuckoo. Today we saw Memphis go down. That's probably the biggest bracket buster today. Another one of those classic 5-12s, Chris.
Yeah, and right now, just to give you a little rundown, Duke all over Mount St. Mary's. No Cooper flag needed in that one, that's for sure. We also have North Carolina right now. Ole Miss is starting to take it to them a little bit, Mike Bell. They're up 44-26.
Right.
Maryland and Grand Canyon just getting underway. We got a funny story about that one coming up for you in a little bit. And then Vanderbilt's over St. Mary's, a 10-7 matchup, 42-36.
Hey, man, Brian McFadden's going to join us coming up this hour, talk about what he thinks about Kirk Cousins, the dynamic in that locker room. Kind of been the focal point today. We heard what Ovi Mihaly had to say about that earlier. That's coming up, and we will also get into, as Chris said, the Braves. Some good news about how the pitching staff's coming together. One guy who covers baseball pretty significant name, really likes the Braves this year, but Chris is a little dubious about it.
Yeah, I'm not entirely, because, Mike, it's just more of the same. And what I mean by that is the Atlanta Braves have been using the philosophy of if this guy returns to form, struck gold on Chris Sale.
Right.
If Ronaldo Lopez can become a full-time starter, struck gold on that too. But you're now relying on guys who have never it before in the bullpen and the back end of the rotation. Ian Anderson, as much as we love him, hasn't been a consistent starter in 3 or 4 years now. Grant Holmes, you're asking him to do something he's never done before. Same thing with Dylan Lee and Pierce Johnson in the back of the bullpen.
Come on, Chris, it's Friday. People are giving us cigars and buying us shots. Hey, man, we like to start every hour of every show with a big hearty
hey, man!
Thank you, studio audience, as we're live here at Twin Peaks in Buckhead. This hour of the show brought to you by our buddies at B-Dubs. Don't forget, guys, basically Monday through Friday, every day of the week, there's always some shenanigans going on at B-Dubs. So get over there, man, for some fun and feeling good at B-Dubs at Buffalo Wild Wings. All right, man. We had some good guests on the show this week and on the station as a whole. One of those guys was Albert Breer.
Yes.
He came on the morning shift.
Yeah, and he was talking about a couple of things involving Kirk Cousins. The first thing he said was, listen, I'm not entirely sure if he'll be here post-June 1.
I would say no, Tiff. Like, and the reason why is because I do think there's going to be a team that's going to get desperate here. And I don't know exactly who it is, but I think all of us were waiting on what Aaron Rodgers is going to do. And then there's going to be some dominoes after that. Russell Wilson, Joe Flacco. And, you know, all you got to do is just sort of count up these situations and look at it and say, there's probably going to be somebody who's going to be left with something they don't like and is going to be looking for an alternative. And, you know, I think in the end, like, there's a good chance that Terry Fontenot and his group wind up looking pretty smart for waiting this thing out because, you know, are they going to be able to move all $27.5 million for this year off their books? Maybe not. But I think there will be an opportunity out there somewhere for them to get a draft pick back for Kirk Cousins, which I think everybody would have seen as a pretty massive upset 3 months ago.
I agree. And Carl's been on this. Give our boy credit. Man, we're always on top of this. Our 92.9 The Game. Carl said he always thought it was going to be a post-June 1.
Yep.
He thinks it's going to go all the way to maybe pre-camp. And then we can get into the debate, which you're here later for Brian McFadden, of what happens if you don't get traction and Kurt, and you really won't just cut him and eat it, and then Kirk's going to camp, and are you cool with the potential distraction?
No, but you know what, Mike? The Falcons clearly are, because they've stuck to their guns this entire time.
Right.
They have not wavered at all, to the point where you, I, and everybody else basically saying, there's no way they're going to do this. What? Oh, okay, they're going to do this, aren't they?
Here's more from Albert Breer from The Morning Shift with Mike and Squid and Tiff. Potential landing spots. You and I think it's only one, Cleveland. Here's
Cleveland,
Albert.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it's going to just come down to where he winds up and to where Aaron Rodgers winds up. You know, so if he winds up in Pittsburgh, then the Giants, I think, could be interested. If he winds up with the Giants, the Pittsburgh could be interested. I think Cleveland is going to wind up in the mix regardless at some level because of the connection to Kevin Stefanski that Kirk has. But, you know, my guess would be that someone's going to get desperate enough to flip the Falcons a draft pick. And I think in that case, it works out for everybody because the Falcons get out from underneath at least part of the contract for this year. And I think that creates the cleanest situation for Michael Penix going into his second year.
Yeah, what it really comes down to, Mike, simply, is Cleveland needs to create any sort of room that they're going to have in order to bring him in if a trade were to take place. The reason they're so hard and fast on the fact that they want to wait to see if the Falcons cut him and do what they're saying they're not going to do is because they don't have the money. So they're essentially saying, hey, listen, we're going to wait and see, but we don't have the loot right now. But okay, so if that's the case, then Cleveland needs to up the ante on the draft pick that they're willing to give. And that's why I believe the Josina Anderson report that came out mentioned a third-round pick. Because if Cleveland's going to be the team, they're not going to be able to eat as much money. Therefore, the draft pick is going to have to go up.
Yeah, I just don't know, you know, where this goes. If we could buy the pick, that's the phrase that's been thrown around to your point. I'm cool with it. I mean, I've always felt we'd have to eat, you know, 75% of it anyway.
Yeah.
You know, but if you can find a way to leverage that for something tangible, provided you can get something impactful as we did in 2016. Because to me, we got to get some impact guys on the defense. Having a third-round pick is big. Because as you guys know, don't have the third-round pick, that was Matthew Judon. Don't have a fifth-round pick, that unfortunately was the the Kirk Cousins talking to somebody a week or 2 days too early to a trainer before he signed. And we don't have a sixth-rounder because that goes all the way back to our trade for Van Jefferson with the Rams like 2 years ago. How crazy is that?
Yeah.
So we don't have all the depth that you'd like to have as far as your draft to really, you know, because, you know, you guys know, why did the Patriots do what they did? Belichick would amass as many as possible. It's a contact sport. You got, you know, better odds. Hey, one more cut from Albert Breer from The Morning Shift, and that's about Trey Hendrickson. I give credit to my partner as well, in absentia. Carl always says, don't sweat the cap. They'll always find a way. I know there's a bunch of teams that would make a way to get Trey Hendrickson. Here's Albert Breer on that option.
That thing is very fluid. They were, I think, sort of had it in their heads that they were going to try to trade him. Now, that's been a little bit more difficult than they thought because the way they value him as a guy who's had 35 sacks over the last year, like, but you're going to have a hard time giving that guy away for a pick that's outside to the top 50 picks. On the flip side, if you're another team, you're looking at it and you're saying, he's 31 years old, he's going to need a new contract. And so is this worth going in on where you're giving up multiple assets, you're giving up that contract plus a pick in the first two rounds, and for the teams that have shown interest, that's a bridge too far. So you're sort of stuck there a little bit, and being stuck there bought them time to do the deals with the receivers, and now they're diving back in to see if they can find some sort of middle ground. I do think, like, to some degree, that the Neil Hunter deal in Houston to give them a little bit of clarity, and then, okay, like, he got a deal at, I think it's 35.6 for the single-year extension. You know, maybe that gives them a little bit of clarity in what it should cost for them to get something done. You know, again, I think they'll try. I don't know if they'll be able to get something done. We'll see.
Again, we talked to Armando Salguero yesterday from Miami. Dolphins are in the same boat. The Bengals are going down that same road. Unless you ace it in the draft, and you are unfortunately on the cusp of the playoffs, so you don't have a great draft pick, that you have got to find some defensive playmakers, because if you lose Trey Hendrickson, you are just like the Dolphins. And you literally scored 35 to 40 points and lost games. I mean, it's self-explanatory. I mean, I always thought I would stay with Ja'Marr Chase, let T. Higgins go, trust my draft, Find a wide receiver. If you're a good GM, you can find a good skill position guy. And I know the production's there, but to me, it's just you've got to beef up the defense.
And if I'm the Falcons, Mike Bell, what are the chances the guy I take at 15 turns into 60% of the player that Trey Hendrickson is?
Right.
Take it. Take the pick.
Sold.
Take the pick. I make that trade 100 times out of 100 because I am bringing in a proven commodity that will be the best defensive lineman the Falcons have had in 20 years.
One more cut for you guys, and this comes from yesterday. If you missed it, we replayed it so you guys could hear it. But this is one of our co-hosts in our network, part of our sister station, WFNZ, up in Charlotte, our buddy Travis Hancock. We signed Jordan Fuller. Do we ever get the financials on that?
No.
So we don't know. Chris was wondering, is he a complimentary piece? We'll talk to Brian McFadden about it coming up next segment. But here's a guy who follows the Panthers the way you and I follow, when I say you and I, you and your car, follow the Falcons. Here he is talking about Jordan Fuller. What did we get?
No, he really didn't, and that was one of the problems. They tried Dane Jackson and Jordan Fuller, and they didn't really add a whole lot. So, yeah, I know that he came in with more of a reputation than he played with. So, yeah, we saw that signing. The only thing that I remembered of him doing was his mom sang the national anthem at a game late in the season, and okay. he got scratched from the lineup for that game. So it was a very awkward. It was a bad time. Yeah, it was kind of like, uh-oh, this can't be good.
Oy.
So, I mean, he's a depth guy, and hopefully for you guys, he's better than he was here. But he was part of kind of a rotation in the secondary that they needed more of, and that's why they're trying to bulk up more in the secondary right now.
Again, he follows it like we follow our team, so take it with a grain of salt, one man's opinion, but didn't exactly give me a lot of, confidence on the signing, which means maybe a safety is still in play.
Yeah, I just can't get over the edge thing, Mike, as much as we know that there are good options there. Will Johnson's there, corner. There's some safeties out there that are intriguing as well, maybe even a linebacker, although the main guy from Alabama that we talked to D-Led about, Campbell, he's hurt right now, so we don't know if he's even going to be a viable option, but it all just comes back to the edge.
Hey, man, we're live at Twin Peaks in Buckhead. Everybody's watching the hoops, checking out their brackets. The only thing that happened today, Colorado State, another 12-5 upset like Clemson did with McNeese. So it's all chalk for the most part. Duke is smoked, Mount St. Mary's, and North Carolina getting smoked by Ole Miss. SEC finally stepping up. We'll give you more scores, but up next, Brian McFadden. What's it like to play in a locker room with a guy that kind of, I don't know, did some weird stuff like Kirk Cousins? Hear it next.
The strong arm story of the day is brought to you by John Foyt Associates Personal Injury Law.
Join us right now, though, we're going to talk some football. Our weekly visit with one of our favorite guests, BMAC, Brian McFadden, two-time Super Bowl winner with the Steelers, a proud member of the Seminoles when there was things to be proud about. He joins us here on the waitforit.com hotline. BMAC, Aaron Rodgers in Pittsburgh. How does that make you feel?
You know what? Considering the options, it makes me feel pretty good. Hopefully we can get something done because the only option we have outside of Aaron Rodgers in terms of a starting quarterback is Mason Rudolph and potentially going back down the road with Russell Wilson. I, for one, would welcome Aaron Rodgers, consider the other options, and hopefully we get some news from Aaron Rodgers sooner than later.
Do you think he would acquiesce to Mike T and the culture he has there, or do you think he'd still try to pull some of those same shenanigans he did with the Jets?
No, I think it's a different situation, Chris, than what Aaron Rodgers walked into in New York with the Jets. Let's keep it real. When Aaron Rodgers became a New York Jet, he had the biggest personality, the biggest character, the biggest, fame out of any other individual in that organization, including the head coach. But when he goes to Pittsburgh, number one, the foundation is already laid. You're talking about a organization, granted, they haven't had a lot of postseason success in most recent, but they got success. Mike Tomlin is a bigger personality than Aaron Rodgers in the NFL landscape. The brand is a bigger personality than Aaron Rodgers. So it's a different situation. You know, New York was trying to figure things out. Robert Saleh was trying to figure things out. Pittsburgh has already figured things out. Mike Tomlin has as well. So I think Aaron Rodgers walked into a situation knowing that, man, I'm not the biggest fish in the pond anymore.
I know that they love stability, BMAC, in Pittsburgh. It goes without saying, you know, from Chuck Knoll to obviously the Chin, and now with Bill Cowher, and then to Mike Tomlin. But it just seems like they're just not really going anywhere. You know what I mean? They're just not getting out of that first round. I mean, we know the record, and look, a lot of Falcon fans say, hell, I'll take 10-7 all day over where we've been living. But it seems like there needs to be a sense of urgency with the Steelers this year to really go somewhere.
Yeah, the standard is a high standard year in and year out for Pittsburgh. But to your point, Mike, they haven't done anything relevant in postseason play. And for whatever excuses you want to make, you've been good enough to be good in the regular season, but you flatline in the postseason. So the sense of urgency has to be there. And you look at adding Aaron Rodgers, right now he's better than any other option. Now, will this get you over the hump? Most people would say no, because we feel like Aaron Rodgers, the great Aaron Rodgers, is no longer there. Now, can he be more than a serviceable guy? The one bright spot, I'll say, Mike and Chris, is that the last month of the season with Aaron Rodgers and the Jets, he played really, really good football. You know, they didn't win a lot of ball games, but if you look at his overall numbers throughout the entire season, they weren't bad. So if most folks are hoping and thinking that, hey, maybe he can give the same thing that he did for the Jets in the latter months of the season in 2024 to start the entire season off if he becomes a Steeler.
All right, so here in Atlanta, you know the deal. We talk about it with you seemingly every week, B, but the latest is that teams may have been calling about Kirk, maybe as high as a third-round pick. Then we get conflicting reports that the Falcons are the ones doing the calling. Do you think, come week one, Kirk Cousins will actually be the backup quarterback here in Atlanta?
Nah, I don't think so. I don't think so. Listen, it doesn't make any sense. It won't make any sense. It won't. I don't care if someone is offering you a late-round pick for Kirk Cousins. Move on. Move on. Because having him be a part of the Atlanta Falcons this year does more harm than good, in my opinion. Because clearly, Michael Penix is the guy. Regardless of what happens with Michael Penix, as long as he's healthy, he is the guy. That's why you drafted him with a top 10 pick a year ago. So just move on. Stop prolonging the process. You're holding on to something that's no longer there. So I believe that's the smart thing to do, and that actually will happen before the start of the season, because it doesn't make any sense to have a backup quarterback who's making north of $20 million, who wants to be a starter, being a part of your team, because eventually he could become a distraction without saying one word, just being on the roster.
Right. And we talked to Ovi Mihaly, another NFL veteran, who said the same thing. He says, weird juju in the locker room. You know, it just creates strange energy. And that's something, like I said, look, I understand the Falcons. You got to bluff and you play the long game and you hope somebody comes to you, maybe Cleveland. And here's the thing, B, the one saving grace is maybe we spend like 15, 17, I don't know. We're going to have to eat a big chunk of that thing just to get him out of here, but maybe we could buy a pick. And that, I guess that's all you could ask for. I think most Falcon fans want to see that pick be for this draft. It may just have to be for 26.
Exactly. I'm right there with you. Just whatever you can get, I don't care if it's a box of Kit Kats. I can care less. Take it and just move on.
Chatting with our buddy Bryant McFadden, co-host, All Things Covered podcast. Check him out, CBS HQ analyst as well. All right, B, the Falcons make a couple of other moves. They bring in Jordan Fuller at safety. We talked to somebody yesterday out of Charlotte who said he was just a guy here, but then you look at the back of the football card in L.A., seemed to gel well with Raheem. Do you think he is a starting caliber player for the Falcons?
I think he can be. To your point, he had really, really good success playing under Coach Raheem for the Rams, and something just didn't click well with him with the Carolina Panthers. I do believe, though, I'll say this, you know, adding Jordan Fuller just adds more depth to an area where you need to improve on, in my opinion. So I think they still need to draft a safety. They need to try to add more talent, depending on what happens. If you look at this board of safeties, it's a talented group in the draft. Of course, you know, Nick Emenwori is my top guy. I think he's probably one of the best defensive backs, forget safety or corner, that's available. But you look at the second and third round, fourth round type value, there's still value there. But I think right now, you know, Coach Raheem is thinking that he can revitalize Fuller to be the player that he became while playing for the Rams, and that's why he went out and made that move.
It is our man, Bryant McFadden. Guys, we're bouncing around the NFL as we're live from Twin Peaks here in Buckhead. Yeah, man, I know it's going to be an exciting year. I mean, everybody's loaded up. Some teams, like, I think the Commanders, I mean, we always get that they won the offseason. Well, they're already a good team, but Commanders made some moves. I think, you know, Ravens got to beef up the defense. Everybody's chasing the Chiefs. And in the Chiefs, they fixed their O-line. That's the thing, B. I think in the AFC, I don't know how people just expect the Chiefs to fall off the planet. I think they're going to be right back in the mix next year.
No question. When you got 15, you're going to be right back in the mix. You know what I mean? They went to the Super Bowl. And what people are forgetting about is that Kansas City made it to the Super Bowl, and throughout the entire season, they played without their wide receiver one and wide receiver two. And they played without those guys, both missing time pretty much the majority of the season when you talk about losing Rashee Rice and losing Hollywood Brown. How many offenses could be able to weather that storm in the National Football League, losing both wide receiver one and wide receiver two? Think about what Philadelphia. Think about if Philly lost A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, and they both missed time at the same time. And we're talking about more than eight games. Think about what that offense would have looked like. Granted, you still had Saquon Barkley, but clearly it would have been a drop-off. All the Chiefs did was find different ways to win ball games. Now they're starting to stockpile talent, you know, getting healthier. So, yeah, you cannot turn your back on Kansas City as long as they have Pat Mahomes and Andy Reid, and you can't forget about Steve Spagnuolo.
Where do you have right now Shadur and Cam Ward going in the draft, B?
I think, you know, just based on everything that I've been hearing and watching and reading, I think Cam Ward would be the first quarterback to come off the board. I just did a mock draft a few days ago. I actually had Tennessee taking Cam Ward. They got to go get a quarterback. They have no quarterback. Abdul Carter is a very, very intriguing, enticing prospect. But you got to find a way to answer the most important question on your team, which is the quarterback. In that very same mock draft, I had the New York Giants selecting Shedeur Sanders at 3. Makes sense all in the world, especially if he's available. Even though you're trying to bring in a potential bridge veteran quarterback, it makes sense to go get Shedeur if he's available.
Hey, B-Mac, we were talking about this a few weeks ago about, you know, Travis Hunter and what team's going to get him and how conservative are they going to be using his amazing skills on both sides of the football. We went back and looked at it because Deion said, why would you keep the best on the bench? In an interview recently, Deion, his most receptions one year, we went back and looked it up, it was the Cowboys, it was 36 receptions in a season. So that's, is that what you envision, like the most you'll see for a guy like Travis Hunter in the right offense?
I think we can see more than that. The thing about Travis Hunter, and I say this all the time, when you look at offensive players, wide receivers don't play 100% of the snaps anyway. Think about it. In an NFL game, in a game in general, the only position groups that plays the entire snaps, right, especially they're healthy, is the offensive line. All five offensive linemen play every rep, the quarterback and the cornerbacks and the safeties. And linebackers based on packages. But when you look at wide receivers, they're coming in and out anyway. So if I'm the New England Patriots, and let's say, hypothetically speaking, they draft Travis Hunter, I will have Travis Hunter playing both ways. Because you're not going to play every snap, even if you're only playing one position. If you're only playing wide receiver, you're not going to play every snap anyway. But I would find a way to have snaps for him to be involved offensively and then make sure he's involved in the defense.
All right, B, when you look at the state of the NFC right now, do you feel like the 49ers are doing enough to get back in the mix? Or are they going to be a team that has sort of let their window pass, especially after moving on from guys like Debo this offseason?
Chris, that window, I'm not saying the window is closed, but that window has passed, in my opinion, right? Kyle Shanahan, I want to say in a four-year span, you made it to two Super Bowls, you didn't win one. Those are missed opportunities. Now you look at the turnover in the roster, right? You're talking about a team that's already lost 11 out of the 22 starters from a year ago. Now, it's not a rebuild, but it's a turnover on the roster. And now you're about to pay your rookie quarterback who you've had at a bargain deal over the last two-plus years, right? Now you got to really be mindful in what you do in terms of the money, because the money will most of the money will be tied up in your young quarterback. And the only thing you have to show for everything that you've had, think about all the talent they've had on their team over the last 2 years. It's just a Super Bowl appearance. And in both Super Bowl losses, we can't forget, Chris, they had a double-digit lead in both games.
Right.
So I'm not saying the window is closed, but in terms of what we've seen, it's almost like they're starting. They missed their opportunity, in my opinion, because other teams now are really catching our attention. When we talk about the San Francisco 49ers in the last few years, every time we talk about them in the NFC, we will always have them in what? The top one or the top two. Now, when you look at other teams that we would consider getting ready for this season, San Francisco won't make the top one or top two. They won't make the top three, in my opinion.
Hey, B-Mac, before we cut you loose, man, I was joking around with Chris. I think it was yesterday's show, and I had some Florida State buddies of mine are all in the same boat. Should I renew my FSU season tickets for this year? Alabama's the first game.
Hey, don't you give up hope, Mike. Don't you do that. We had a rocky year, but don't you give up hope. I believe we're bouncing back. I mean, think about it like this, Mike. The bar is set pretty low this year. We only won two games last year.
Yeah.
But
this feels like Jeff Bowden, Willie Taggart kind of Florida State for me, man. I don't know. I'm nervous in the service.
Yeah. But hopefully everything, we get this thing bouncing back, man. And we got some talented players coming in, and hopefully they can really make it work and be at their best. Because to your point, it was a long, long year for all us former nose watching our nose go to battle last year.
And you actually graduated. All right, brother. Have a great weekend, B. We'll talk to you soon, man.
Thank you.
That's our man, B-Mac, guys. Coming up next, we're going to talk to our man, Grant McCauley. What a nerd in a bow tie had to say about the Braves. Chris disagrees with his thoughts on the Braves for this year. This hour of the show, guys, is brought to you by B-Dubs. Get on down to Buffalo Wild Wings, where basically it's always kind of like a happy kind of vibe, especially on a Friday. Buffalo Wild Wings, man. It is Dukes and Bell. We're going to talk more about the March Madness, give you the scoreboard update. Only one big upset today. We're live at Twin Peaks in Buckhead. Come back with Grant McCauley. Hey, man, 5:45, we are live here at Twin Peaks in Buckhead. Chris is in for Carl today. I'd like to think Carl's bracket is probably as busted as everybody else's.
Yeah.
Today, though, Memphis, but again, that 5:12 thing has just been a killer. We'll talk more about what's going on around the rest of college basketball. Right now, let's talk to our man, our G-Money, Grant McCauley, about the Bravos. Grant, I don't know how you feel about this. I know you're always glass half full. Ken Rosenthal from Fox Sports thinks the Braves are the second-best team in MLB.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily disagree with him, but you got to go out there and prove it. And I think the Braves kind of ended up in that place last year where you had everybody saying maybe they are the best team in Major League Baseball, and then the plan went sideways. So, obviously, you've got to play the games. The offseason is what it is. The game is not played on paper. I think that this is a club that's motivated from my time down in Northport to just get healthy and do the things they're capable of doing. And it's shown this spring that if healthy, and for the most part, outside of the Sean Murphy situation, they have been, this could be a pretty special year for the Atlanta Braves. But again, they got to go out and do it. Actions speak louder than words, even though that doesn't necessarily help us out on the radio.
Grant, they made a minor move yesterday, signing Alex Verdugo to a $1.5 million contract. How does he fit in terms of the Brian De La Cruz's, the Jared Kelnick's of the world? Where does he slot?
I think this is just a depth move. I mean, obviously Verdugo's been a useful player. The Red Sox were hoping he'd be way more than useful when they got him as kind of at least one of the centerpieces of the Mookie Betts trade. So let's go ahead and check in on how that worked out for the Red Sox. But Verdugo is still a pretty young player. He's in the prime years of his career. Maybe he'll be able to unlock or figure something out, at least get back to the player he was a couple of years ago, which has been a very useful outfielder. He doesn't strike out a lot. He can draw some walks. He's a good base runner. A lot of things to like about Verdugo, but 2024 was kind of in line with what the Braves were dealing with. Either you were hurt or you weren't having a great year, and it was the latter for Alex Verdugo. So I don't think this changes much for Jared Kelnick in particular. Brian De La Cruz, I think, is still in that place where he's got to go out and prove it and earn whatever at-bats and playing time he can get. But for all three of those guys, when Ronald Acuna Jr. gets back into this Braves picture in the outfield in, you know, early May, I would at least circle that on the calendar, it's going to be pretty hard for anybody in that group to be getting at-bats with Michael Harris, Jurickson Profar, and then Ronald Acuna Jr. in place. So a depth move, nice to have, and, of course, as we saw last year, can come in handy if things go sideways.
It's a Grant McCauley, guys, on the WaitForIt.com hotline. We're live from Twin Peaks here in Buckhead watching the tournament. Grant, it just seems like the pitching is really much better than expected. I mean, we expect that Ronaldo Lopez will be good to go. Chris Sale has looked great in spring training. And then Schwellenbach, what he threw out the other day on the heels of the way that Spencer Strider looked. So now we're just sweating the five spot, which we always sweat.
Yeah, and I think every club in Major League Baseball finds itself in that boat, except maybe the Dodgers, who for some reason have nine starting pitchers and then are going to sign Clayton Kershaw back. So they work on a different planet, and that's their thing, and good for them. But as far as what the Braves have, I mean, if you look at the totality of their offseason and you think, okay, we're going to lose one of the aces of our staff in Max Fried, who's been there and done that for us for, what, six, 7 years. We're going to lose the veteran anchor, in my opinion, of their staff in Charlie Morton. He's not the number one anymore. He was more of that middle-to-back-end starter, but those were useful innings and starts that you had to figure out. And Spencer Schwellenbach was a huge answer to that. What we saw from Spencer Strider, who is going to get one more start here this weekend before the Braves go out to San Diego to start the regular season, that, I think, got people excited about, okay, wait, we've got Chris Sale and Spencer Schwellenbach and Ronaldo Lopez and Spencer Strider. All of a sudden, I think you feel way better about whether it's A.J. Smith-Shawver, Ian Anderson, Grant Holmes, some of the other depth that you may find, or somebody who just jumps onto the, you know, onto the page and into the story that you didn't expect, like, I don't know, Spencer Schwellenbach. This could be a better starting staff than it was. You might have felt, at least at the start of spring training or over the course of the winter, when they didn't replace those big starters. And briefly on the bullpen, I know Craig Kimbrell is not coming back through a time portal when he left 10 years ago. He's not the same pitcher, but I still think he can be a very useful pitcher when he gets ramped up. That could be about as close to a Joe Jimenez replacement as you can find out there. And I still think Craig Kimbrell's got some tread on the tire and something to prove.
Well, I was just about to ask, that's a perfect dovetail into my next question, Grant. How many high leverage situations off the jump do you expect him to get a chance to have?
I think he'll get them. Whether that's the sixth, seventh, or eighth inning, I don't know. We all know who's pitching the ninth inning. But we also know that if somebody gets hurt, you've got to have other guys capable of picking, literally taking the ball and picking up where that guy left off and getting the job done. Bringing in a pitcher with, you know, 10 to 12 at least strikeouts per nine needs to curtail the walks, obviously. That's a big part of pitching in high leverage. You can't put guys on for free. But you look at that resume, and it's hard to not get excited about having him as one of your four best relievers on the club. That's a pretty good place to be in, I think, because you got Dylan Lee, you got Pierce Johnson, you've got Raisel Iglesias, you put Craig Kimbrell into that mix, see what you get from Daisbell Hernandez, and somebody else will, I'm sure, jump in, and maybe I'm forgetting somebody, I don't know, off the top of my head, but it's a pretty good group, but to make a long story short.
Grant McCauley's with us. I guess our catcher situation is set. Since that Drake mentioned that Drake's ready to go.
Yeah, Drake Baldwin has officially made the team as the Braves have added him to the Major League roster. So barring something spectacular and or unfortunate, and I say that knocking on wood, but this is a kid that has earned this opportunity and came to spring training ready just in case, and just in case became, it looks like, opening day roster with this club. Now, Sean Murphy's not going to be down for long. At least that's, you know, what we understand about his injury. So we'll see how long this opportunity is, but Drake Baldwin's going to make the most of it, and I think it's going to be pretty exciting to see what this kid can do.
Do you compare Drake, I mean, not to oversimplify it, to what William Contreras is? He really rakes, and the defense is going to get better?
Yeah, well, I think that the real knock on William Contreras was that pitchers just didn't love throwing to him. Not because they disliked him personally, but there's a level of comfort that comes with, you know, that partnership. And if you're not quite the same receiver as, say, a Travis d'Arnaud or a Sean Murphy, it's a preference thing. It wasn't, you know, a personality thing. It was a preference thing. And you have to give the Brewers a ton of credit for how they developed William Contreras. That kid can hit. I'm a big fan of him from that perspective. I don't know if I'm ready to put, you know, all-star slugging catcher on Drake Baldwin right out of the box. I don't know if that's fair, but I'm not going to put past him the fact that he could make an impact because of the style of hitter that he is, the at-bats that he's able to work, his all-fields approach, and it's just a plus that he's left-handed on top of all that.
Grant, who do you have right now being the primary backup middle infielder?
I think Nick Allen has earned that job as of right now. I think that he's got some versatility. Maybe the bat can play a little bit, though I don't expect a lot because you look at the major league numbers and they're certainly not anywhere close to what he's done in AAA, but he seems to be a good, hard-nosed, versatile player that can be a little bit of everything that you need. And they've also got Eli White, who they could play a little bit at second base, but that's limited, and I don't know that that's necessarily what they're looking for primary backup. So if we're circling that one particular, I'll call him maybe the 26th guy on the roster, it could be Nick Allen.
I know you tweeted about it. It was reported, you know, Marcell Ozuna talking with the media about, you know, his role. It just seems like, you know, again, I was never one of those people ready to hang him and get rid of him and never bring him back. I always had his back. He actually sent me an autographed jersey saying thanks for supporting him getting that contract extension. Yeah. And then my wife put it in the wash, and I lost the signature. I kid you not. But, Marcell, I mean, what's a realistic expectation? Can he do 75% of what he did last year? He was so good for so much of the season.
I believe so, and I think the Braves are counting on him. I mean, is he going to hit 300 with 40 homers and 100 RBI every year from here on out? No, I think that's asking a lot. But I think he's proven the last 2 years that whatever changes and adjustments that he has made and the work that he puts in is second to none. And he not only has he had success himself, but I think he has been a very positive influence and a sounding board for other hitters and players on the team. And there's something to be said for that as well. But that's kind of in the intangible department. But the tangibles, Mike, I would expect 270, 30 homers, 100 runs batted in. If he goes above those numbers, that's great. But if he's doing that and everybody else is healthy and clicking, this is going to feel a lot more like 2023 than 2024.
Do you expect Jerickson Profar to lock down the leadoff spot while Ronald is out? And then when he comes back, where do you think he would slot in the lineup?
It looks like that's where they've been leaning. I mean, that's not really a big surprise. I kind of thought maybe they'd give Michael Harris some run with it, and they might in some matchups. But with Profar being a switch hitter, how many matchups are you really going to play? And he's a guy that I think puts a great professional at-bat on you, which is something you'd love to see out of your leadoff hitter. He doesn't strike out a ton. He has some pop. He can run the base as well. So, you know, you give him a little bit of time there. Obviously, we know who the answer is long-term to that, but to kind of answer the second part of that and what Brian Snitker was excited about was Jerickson Profar could literally hit anywhere. You could bat him second. You could bat him in the middle of the order. You can lead him off. You could hit him down towards the bottom if you needed to, though I don't anticipate that.
Yeah.
He just really is just one of those complimentary pieces with a pretty serious resume, you know, of being one of those top prospects. It took a long time to put it all together, but coming off an all-star campaign, that's the kind of player I think you'd like to add.
And, Grant, I know you may have answered this question on the morning shift or middays, but you're not really getting a specific timeline. I mean, I know the fans probably see what Strider did and go, okay, he's ready, which I know there's going to be more to it than that. And we dodged a bullet with Riley, dodged a bullet with Profar. But do you think May, first week in May for Ronald Acuna?
I'm still thinking that early portion of May right there is kind of what they're looking at. I know Ronald was talking to him when he first showed up at Northport and did his first media availability, was like, hey, if they call me and tell me it's time to play, I'm ready. I'm going to play. So they're taking their time with him. I talked to Alex Anthopoulos for a long time while I was down there, and they said, look, we just don't want to put, you know, external time frames on everything so that if he does need another day or something happens, that all of a sudden it's a major setback and that becomes a story. They just want to let him go through everything he needs to and show them when he's ready. But when he goes out on that rehab assignment, he's got 3 weeks. So that pretty much lets us know how that clock is ticking.
All right, big man, we appreciate you, man. Thanks for coming on. And next week, I know it's like dragging. I still don't like the way they start the season out in Japan, and then we go back to spring training. But before you know it, man, we'll be at Murph's for opening for the home opener.
Yep.
I can't wait to see the Braves out in San Diego to start things. Thanks a lot.
Yep, look forward to it. Thanks, guys.
That's our man, Grant McCauley, guys, right here on the WaitForIt.com Highline. It is Dukes and Bell, man. Chris, we got some serious SEC upsets.
Yeah, listen, it's been, let's call it over the first day and a half so far, the tournament, a mixed bag.
It hasn't been this bad for the Southeast since Sherman came through Atlanta and then made a left turn towards Savannah. We'll explain when we come back. We'll get to the daily download. Also, our conversation with D-Led. How are they looking at Alabama? D-Led was at the Tides Pro Day. What does he think about all the things that are happening with Kirk Cousins or not happening? It's all part of the big 6 o'clock hour next, live from Twin Peaks Buckhead.
William.